This episode is brought to you by North Texas Honda Dealers. North Texas Honda Dealers, they're here to help.
He has time, launches it to the end zone. Touchdown, Terrence Williams!
The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught. He's the worst ever!
Bundy at the 10. What's he up the right sideline?
Yeah, he's got to go. He's tackled. Sam Houston wins it. The Bearcats capture their first FCS champion.
Hello and welcome to the Republic of Football. I'm your host, Ishmael Johnson, in studio with Mike Craven. Mike, what's up, man?
Doing pretty good. How are y'all doing?
I am doing pretty well. We are almost done with this damn magazine. So we are. We're literally in the phase where we're not adding anything new, which I love. It's just ton of reading. Eyes get glazed over. You start to hate the idea of reading ever. You say, like, I'm never going to read an article or a book again after you put this thing to bed. But I prefer this over the sleepless nights of crap I got to write like 3,000 words.
You know, this has been such a illuminating experience for me. Like, yeah. I knew it was going to be a learning curve, and I love those. Like,
sure.
Doing something different. Like, I was very excited to kind of tackle this project and see what was true of what I thought it was going to be and what wasn't true. I honestly thought this week I was going to be scrambling with the transfer portal and the depth charts and all that kind of stuff. The thing that's been getting me is predicted finishes. When I've been going back and like looking at like, okay, what did I do for the Big 12, the SEC, the Big 10 even, Pac-12, like, you know, it's like, okay, who did I pick and how much has that changed? The top 25. I texted Tepper yesterday and was like, I'm sending you a new top 25. I can't, like a month ago, you know, it's so old. And so that's what I'm worried about in terms of like the magazine, not necessarily depth chart, because that feels like it's easy to explain. Like, hey, that kid wasn't on campus yet, or you know, he wasn't an expected starter. I couldn't just make him a starter. But like, if I pick, like, say the team that wins the national championship, I have is like 14th.
Sure.
Or the team that wins the Big 12, I have like 6th. Like, I'd be mortified. So like, that's the part where I've been most struggling. Like, do I put A&M in the top 5?
Sure.
Like, I don't know if I should.
Do you want to be the guy that picks him first, or you know, like, or like, do you not want to take that chance and just?
And like, how much do I go on my own personal belief? How much do I look at other top 25s and try to like be similar to that? Are you predicting what the top 25 best teams are?
Right.
What they should be in week one? What you think they should be at the end of the season?
Sure, sure.
Right. Like, I think Utah is better than Notre Dame, but I think Notre Dame has a better shot of reaching the college football playoffs. So do I put Notre Dame in front of Utah because I think that they may end up at the end of the year with a better record, or do I rank it as in terms of like
heading into the year?
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's just all of those type of things. It's like, okay, I'm going to hate this. Like, there's going to be one or two.
Right.
Maybe even more.
So
I'm like, oh my God, that's embarrassing.
Right. Which criticism do you prefer more when you're setting your top 25? Do you prefer, like, if you're going off of another top 25, like the, oh, you're just copying, you know, so-and-so's top 25, or do you prefer the criticism of that doesn't match any top 25?
Right. That's,
you know
that's
what I mean?
I think A&M is the perfect one for me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Honestly, and it's in-state, so we can use that as the example. I look around at all these polls, and they all have A&M in the top 6. And I just don't see it.
Yeah.
I can see them being in the top 6 by the end of the year and
surprising
us and being 10-2 and maybe losing to Alabama and one other team and being worthy of that. But right now,
I don't see it.
After that spring, you're counting on a lot of what ifs. That defensive class being really good, those 2022 guys making an immediate impact, somebody figuring out at quarterback, Evan Stewart being an Xavier Worthy type true freshman wide receiver. Like, there's a lot of things we're like betting on the come with A&M that I can't put it there. The thing I landed on was I'm going to make the top 25 of what I think today, not in December, like what I think is like the best 25 teams in week one of the season.
Sure.
And maybe that'll burn me. Maybe next year I'll have a different answer, but I think that's the only way I could do it right now. Cause project just feels like it's almost impossible.
Sure.
To go like, A&M will eventually be one of the top 6. Because I do think in November they may be playing like one of the top 6. You know, like Connor Wigman emerges and figures it out. And like by November, A&M's clicking and just humming and one of the best teams in the day. But I also can see them losing 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
There's just too many question marks right
now. Yeah, too many questions. Yeah, exactly. Not enough like immediate experience right now.
I watched him lose four games last year while beating Alabama.
Yeah. Right. I was about to say, like, I think we talked about this in the office where, you know, we talked about Max Johnson, right, at quarterback. And it's like Max Johnson, they probably win 10 games with Max Johnson last year, right? Mm-hmm. He's a quarterback who was ready for last year when they just needed somebody to not – give you the ups and downs as Zach Calzada did, just like a 6 or 7 out of 10, basically. And this year they need somebody, they need a hero, right? They need like the Connor Wigman to be the guy.
Right.
They don't need a Max Johnson, a steady hand necessarily. They're not there. They need somebody to elevate talent around him, which probably isn't Max Johnson.
And I know that 2022 defensive line class is like super legit. Yeah. I get that before what I'm about to say.
Right.
But they lost their 6 out of their top 7 players in their front 7. You can't tell me. Like, I know Walter Nolan is really, really good, but is he going to be as good as DeMarvin Leal was last year?
Right.
Like, this year?
Michael Clemens.
Like, maybe in 3 years he's better than those guys. Yep. But, like, in October of 2022, are those true freshmen that are walking onto College Station's campus in, like, a week, are they going to be better than those dudes that you just lost? Are they better than Jaden Peavy? Like, I don't know if that's true. And so for me, it's just hard to really like bet on A&M. It's easier to bet on teams like a Houston or, you know,
right.
like, that you kind of know.
You know,
maybe it ends up being wrong too, right? Because Clayton Tune gets injured in week one and it all goes away. But you just feel more comfortable, as comfortable as you can get predicting the future with like those kind of programs.
Yep, I agree. So this week we do continue our interview series. We have Texas A&M Commerce head coach David Bailiff on. Again, another one of our favorite personalities in the state, kind of one of the I guess almost grandfathers of like this generation of Texas football.
We talked about last week. He's like the Kevin Bacon of Texas.
Everybody's within a certain arm's reach of David Bailiff somewhere throughout their career or some program or whatever he touched in some way. So we'll be talking with him. It'll be a very short show. No headlines this week, because if you heard our special episode that dropped later in the week, you saw that we had a lot to talk about with Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. Thanks to Greg and them for having us on for TFT and simulcasting the podcast drop on both feeds. So you got to hear a little bit of that because that was a lot. But in the spirit of that, you may have seen an article come out recently on Texas Football, I believe this week. Monday, was it Monday?
Tuesday.
Tuesday from our very own Mike Craven. He came to us with this idea kind of just like off the top of his head. He was like, Jimbo Fisher and this Nick Saban thing was very pro wrestling. What if I just compared every coach to a pro wrestler? And he gave me a piece of paper before he wrote the article here about all the names that were kind of on there. And that was the most fun I think I've had, like, coming up with like an analysis regarding each name. So if you haven't seen it, yes, Mike Craven did compare all 12 FBS head coaches to their wrestling counterparts, WWE, you can go classic, we did AEW, all that stuff. So we're going to talk about that today because honestly, there's nothing. It's interesting. We can't keep hammering.
It's the off season.
As much as we would love to keep hammering the Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher thing, they probably have found that the waters are kind of calm now. Mm-hmm. They said their piece and we'll see what happens from here on out. But also, there's a lot to talk about with this piece. I love this piece. I love the fact that I think when I see a lot of these kind of pieces, when they compare any coach or players, whatever, to anything outside of their sport or their field, I feel like there's like a, I don't know. I used to get it all the time when like, it was like, oh, pick your soccer team based on your favorite NFL team or whatever.
Right.
There's like certain comparisons that work and you're like, oh, that one kind of works. And then the rest are just kind of, eh, that makes sense. Like what's one of them? Liverpool and Green Bay always get compared together. Right. The traditionally historically rich
Cowboys.
And all that. Yeah, exactly. This one, we basically, and I want to bring Mike in on this, because we basically kind of came up with like persona. As far as like, obviously, when you look at a wrestler and you see what they're about. So we compared persona, we compared career, and we took into account kind of, I guess, a technique as well, right? Mm-hmm. At least in my opinion, that's, I think, those are the three biggest things. Obviously, you have like certain things that may sway more with certain wrestlers. We'll get into the list, but those were the three big things where I was like, okay, this guy makes sense for this guy because of these three things.
I just wanted it to be one of those, like, as soon as you heard it, you were like, yeah, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. I just wanted, you know,
you
like,
get that realization. Oh, right. that yes. works.
You know, where
that
you're
works.
Reading it and you're like, yeah, who would be Dana Holgerson's like doppelganger as a wrestler? Like Roddy Piper, of yeah. course. Like, yes, that's a great one, you know? And yep. so like, I wanted that. And I was watching AEW on mm-hmm. Friday night, you know, unwinding from like the 1,000 pages of editing right. we've all had to do, and was like, okay, if Seth Luttrell was a wrestler, he'd be Kurt Angle.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What about everybody else? Like, yep. who would Jimbo be? Because right. I was thinking about the Saban Jimbo thing. It's like, who is Jimbo? And that mm-hmm. was kind of the genesis of it. Like, Luttrell felt like a lock. Like, I had always in my head made that comparison mm-hmm. between Luttrell and Angle, you know? Like, and it was like, okay, real wrestler, we got one.
Yep.
Well, maybe we can do all 12 of these things. And I went into Slack and was like, hey, guys, tell me if this is a stupid idea before yeah. I spend the rest of my weekend treating this like an NFL draft prep. Right. You know, because like right. I probably sat there like a fantasy football draft prep, you know, like mm-hmm. I had sheets of paper out, like, you know, I'd put like five wrestlers down next right. to each name and like, okay, this one doesn't work because of this. This one, I bounced it off you. Mm-hmm. I bounced off my friend Joe Cook, who's also a big wrestling fan. And so I honestly joked with Tepper about it. It's the most fun I've had since I got this job. You know, like it was a lot of fun because, like, I mean, I'd say my three favorite things, right, are college football, wrestling, and rap music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and like this allowed me to do like two out of those three things.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be able to do this in September.
Sure. I was about to say you're stuck.
And frankly, I wouldn't have been able to do this at the newspaper.
Sure. That's,
right?
Yeah,
like,
that's
it was
fair.
It was
that's
one
fair.
Of those, like, it came into my head, and I was like, well, I can't do that. I can do that.
I'm here now.
Yeah. Like, I can do that. Like, Greg Tepper's my boss. I can. Right? Yeah. I can do that. He's totally going to like this, you yep. know? And so, and like you, I'd always seen those, like, as what's your favorite team as a cartoon character?
Right, right.
What's your
yep.
favorite, you know, like, if you like this movie, you'll love the, you know, and it's like, okay, I'll do something along those lines, but it's like for like, it's
yes.
like person for person.
Yep.
And we can figure this thing out. The hardest part was not being offensive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't want to be mean because
right.
it wasn't a mean spirited
sure.
thing. And I didn't want anybody to read it and go like, oh, he made this guy a heel or
right.
he made this guy a bad guy, or mm-hmm. he must not like so-and-so. Or,
right.
You know, I made Sonny Dykes Randy Orton.
Right.
Well, like, he can be known as a guy who stabs people in the back. Randy
right.
Orton is like, are you calling Sonny the, you know,
right.
or whatever? And so that was my, it's like, I love Sonny Dyke. So
sure.
why would I? And so that was what I was worried about. But I can report that every coach I've heard from loved the idea.
That's good. That's
and
good.
I'm hoping that the ones I haven't heard from doesn't mean that
they just
like
haven't seen
the
it.
Right. They just didn't
yeah.
see it.
They just are too busy and important people who
yes.
like just
right.
did not see it.
Yes.
So you said Seth Luttrell was probably the easiest one for
yeah,
you to compare.
Yeah, as soon as the idea popped in my head of like wrestlers as head coaches, Luttrell, Kurt Angle felt like the jumping off point. Like, if I'm talking to Ish, I could go like, I'm making Luttrell Angle,
uh-huh.
and he knows what I'm trying to put
what
together at that point. Like Luttrell, like they're both kind of serious people who were like legit wrestlers.
Yeah.
Right.
So like that's a personality piece that like, and now we just need to find 11 more where there's a connector that way. It may not be wrestling, you know, or like something
uh-huh.
like there's got to be like one thing in their personality where it's like, yes,
mm-hmm.
of course, duh.
Mm-hmm.
Who yeah. was the most difficult?
Oh man. Probably like Dana Dimmel.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
I was going to say.
Just because we don't know him as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like out in El Paso. He doesn't do as many like public speaking type things. You don't see him in front of cameras as much.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like trying to find because wrestling is so extra.
Mm-hmm.
Like uh-huh. wrestling is like on and Dimmel's
kind
Dimmel's of,
the opposite.
He's
yeah.
Just like
he's,
he's just like a normal dude.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know,
yeah.
he's just like he's
which
just
I
a
think,
normal guy.
Which I think is why the Dusty Rhodes comparison works.
Right.
Because like. Yes, Dusty Rhodes was flashy in his way. Yes, yeah, exactly. His whole thing was, his gimmick was that he was just, I mean, he's the American dream, right?
Yeah.
He is mm-hmm. literally is up from the dirt, you know, yeah. into being a hero, into being the good guy.
And Dimmel and plays into that.
Exactly,
he's,
100%.
He'll
yeah.
talk, like, you spend any time with Dana Dimmel, he'll make a joke about his 1.5 GPA in high school
right.
and, like, you know, just, like, going and drinking. He was more worried about going and partying at a close college to his high school than he
mm-hmm.
was. Like, he was like, I would have gotten to college had I not spent so much time at college when
uh-huh.
I was in high school, you
yeah.
know? So it was like, okay, Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
Like, Dusty Rhodes.
Exactly.
Maybe Sark, actually, now that you... you mentioned.
That's a good,
He's
Sark was bad. Tough.
Sark was, let me see, I'm trying to think where Sark was. Okay, yeah. So this one, I mean, let's talk about it. You know, we legitimately had some conversation about this one.
Yeah.
Because, so if you haven't seen the article, again, recommend everybody goes check it out. We have blurbs about why we picked him. We went with Jeff Hardy.
Yeah.
Right? And for those of you that don't know wrestling, like, there is a similarity there that comes when in terms of off-the-field issues. There are also somebody, both in similarly, Jeff Hardy and Sark, are people that overcame those issues, right? The career trajectory of both, I think, really made this one, drove this one home, right? Because you look at what Jeff, you look at Sark's early career, you know, hotshot coordinator, Washington, gets the USC job, right? The peak of his career.
Yep.
Obviously, what happened. He struggled with his issues, came back into coaching. Now it more or less became like overnight, remade himself as a different coordinator, one of the best offensive minds in the game, back on top, right? A complete revival, complete switch of what where he was. Jeff Hardy, similarly. Jeff Hardy wins a title, has issues off the outside the ring, gets suspended, comes back, rehab, boom. All of a sudden, he's back in AEW now. Looks completely healthy, all this stuff. He's on the rise back up. He's having his like twilight of his career now. I thought that was perfect.
Yeah.
Because you look at somebody like Jeff Hardy and you see people who our age who grew up watching him, you're watching him like nobody else is doing that. You know, he's like jumping off of cages, doing flips, crazy, mm-hmm. you know, putting his body on the line. You're like, no one's wrestling like this guy. And you look at Sark's offenses, you're like, you saw that Alabama team. You're like, no one's doing that.
Yeah.
Like, how are you using receivers like that, yeah. you know?
Going half motion that way and then right. like running back the other way 100%. In a pattern.
And so like this was easily.
Right.
When I saw that, I was like, that works
more success so much. As like a team member
yeah, exactly.
rather than like by himself.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. And still trying to prove themselves as a solo.
I was worried. I'm a recovered addict,
sure.
right? And so like I was worried that people would only, you know, like mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. you made Sark Jeff Hardy because
right.
they like
of
to
X.
drink,
mm-hmm. right.
you know, or used to like to drink or right. whatever. And it's like, well, I got to find a few other things
sure.
to like mm-hmm. tether that
sure.
to. Or
well, like it
would have
been
be
different
like,
if we would have went with a wrestler who just had issues.
Yeah,
right.
Just
who
flamed
just
out
right
or
exactly
like
just
that.
Like had that. But right. no, I think I really do think like when we dug into the Hardy comparison, it was like, oh no, that like
right.
it really is like somebody that really does kind of capture his career so far. Do you have a favorite? Because I have a favorite.
Yeah, Dana Holgorsen, Roddy Piper.
Yeah, that's
like,
a good one.
Like
that's a good one.
Because to me, as a kid, Roddy Piper was my favorite wrestler.
Yeah.
And he was so underrated because sure. of all the crazy stuff Roddy Piper would do. Like, if you right now ask a wrestler fan their favorite Roddy Piper memory, none of them will be in the ring.
Right.
They're
yes.
all
yep. promos,
outside the ring.
Yeah.
Promos, the Piper's Pit stuff, like yep. stabbing guys in the back, coming into the ring and doing some crazy stuff that mm-hmm. he wasn't supposed to. I feel like Holgorsen's the same way.
Yeah.
Where, like, all of Holgorsen's big moments are off the field, like the Red Bull stuff mm-hmm. and the way he gets at officials and the way he acts. But the dude can coach his living tail off.
Yeah.
You know? And Piper could wrestle his ass off. And so, like, to me, it was like this – like the Piper Holgorsen one was what I was going for.
Yep.
You know, it was like, okay, this is what I am trying to do with this article. Now I just need to figure out, I want to be as like, I even in my notes that I sent you in parentheses,
yeah.
I put perfect.
you were proud of
you
that
were,
one.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like, you know, like other ones
in.
Had like little notes and questions and stuff like that. And I'm like, Roddy Piper, perfect. You know? So that one was definitely my favorite one.
Yeah. I had one. And you might be able to guess which one it is. I have two, but I have one especially because we came up with it. Well, you saw the epiphany hit my face.
Yeah. Okay.
So
right.
we were trying to figure out Jake Spavital.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot who we had down for him originally. I think it was Damian Priest. Or no, it was Riddle.
Riddle.
It was Riddle.
It was Riddle.
And
or Austin Theory.
I thought of Austin Theory as yeah. well. And I was like, that kind of works. Like, you know, kind of a young up-and-coming prospect who's getting some good chances but hasn't really hit it, so you kind of question like what is the ceiling of him, and then like, but it never really sat right with me. I was like, it kind of works, whatever. And then you said
he's laid back dude
and I was like,
yeah,
Orange Cassidy.
Because we were talking about Spavital. Because Spavital was the hardest.
Yes.
Originally.
Yes.
Okay.
It ended up not being because Ish had, such
that,
a great idea.
Yeah.
Right.
But like for me, Spav was the hardest because he, again, like Dimmel, mm-hmm. is not like a wrestler.
Sure.
Right? Because he's like such a laid back guy. You know? Like he's just a dude. He's a dude's dude, right? He's just chilling. And so wrestlers can't be like that.
Right.
Because they would be bad at wrestling. Like the whole point is to be turned on to like 13.
Yeah.
And Spav's not. And there is one wrestler who like has made a career of like being like the slow, aloof, hands in the pocket, not really, you know, caring guy.
It's Orange Cassidy.
And that's Orange Cassidy.
So if you haven't seen anybody listening to this, because I know AEW is still, you know, still growing as a company. So like not everybody's heard a lot of some of these wrestlers. If you haven't heard of Orange Cassidy, go just look up on YouTube, just Orange Cassidy moments, right? You will get it 100%. Yeah. He is somebody who's, like Craven said, his entire persona is the guy who doesn't care, right? His chant, when he comes out, the chant the crowd does is literally, he's going to try. Like they start going, he's going to try.
Even when he does his thumbs up, it's like...
His whole thing is a thumbs up, but it's like a half thumbs up. Where
it's like his thumb's not completely, you know, it's like...
And it works, because like, again, he's a guy who you're like... He is who he is personality-wise, but also you're like, can he be a big-time guy? And you're like, I don't know. I got to see it first, right? Similar with Spavital, right? And similar to the big thing you mentioned is the strategy, right? He's very unorthodox in the ring. Spavital, we know the recruiting strategy, right? It's very unorthodox. We haven't seen something like that, especially in this state. And I don't know. Yeah, I heard that personality, I was like, that is it. That's the best one.
It was good to get Orange Cassidy in there too.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Anytime you can mention Orange Cassidy, if you know, you know. That was one of my favorites. The other favorite that I was happy with, that I saw somebody on Twitter kind of was a little confused because, again, AEW is not as well known, fair enough, but was Jeff Traylor's Hangman Page.
Mm.
I loved that one because, again, if you're familiar with Hangman Page, not an incredible talker, but an incredible worker, right? And he's not somebody who, and not to say like Jeff Traylor can convince anybody to play anywhere. Like he's an incredible talker. That's not what I meant. I meant he's not a braggadocious type
a promo
of
guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Hangman Page can talk with anybody, right, in the ring. But the thing he's going to get you to talk, or the thing that he's good at talking about, is how he's going to kick your butt, right? And so Jeff Traylor is good about trying to say, hey, look, we're building something here, right? Here's what it is. He's getting down to business. He is a fighting champion, right? That's Jeff Traylor. I know somebody on Twitter was like, oh, I've never heard of this guy. He's more like Stone Cold. He's nothing like Stone Cold. Jeff Traylor's nothing like Stone Cold. I'm sorry. No offense. That's not saying he's not good, but he's nothing like Stone Cold personality. Is somebody who will cuss you out while he's mud stomping you, whatever. Right. That's not Jeff Traylor.
Like, walk into a room just
exactly.
You know,
No.
Like Jeff's going to walk into a room and like take account of it first, what I mean? Like,
he's gonna assess things. Get over here.
What am I doing? Who do I want to talk to? Who do I not want to talk to?
Yeah, there's no wrestler. Look, put it this way. There's no coach in the state right now that's like The Rock, Stone Cold, or Triple H.
Right.
Like none of those three are like different stratospheres of personality that nobody in here, like, I don't even know in the nation.
Thank goodness.
Like exactly. Can you imagine if we had somebody in Triple H?
Right.
That'd be an insult because Triple H is such a bad guy.
Yeah.
Like he's such a villain.
Nick Saban.
Right. Yeah. Maybe. That's probably the only guy.
Yeah.
But like, The Rock. Can you imagine somebody like The Rock? He'd be in
Lane Kiffin.
Is that The Rock? Oh, my God. Is he The Rock?
Oh, that's a good one.
That's not bad.
I mean, he's not winning enough to be The Rock.
Sure.
Like, he's not great like a Rock, but like, you can definitely Lane Kiffin like
the bear.
Like, well, like,
well,
nobody asked you who your name is, you know? Like, Lane Kiffin definitely did.
You know who I got for Lane Kiffin?
Mm.
Jericho.
Yeah, Jericho's good.
Jericho's good. I wanted to work Jericho in there somewhere, but I didn't know. Again, I didn't know who would fit that. But those just some of the names. Again, there are some that you might be confused at, but some of them that you're like, that works. I think we hit most of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sonny Dykes' Randy Orton is perfect, right? Son of a legend, right? All this kind of stuff. Blazes his own trail now.
I think my favorite's Joey Maguire and Ric Flair.
Yes.
I think just both lives of the party, like flamboyant, like just, I think of the GIF. I think of the, or GIF, GIF, however you pronounce it,
GIF.
Of Ric Flair, like that's Joey Maguire.
Yeah, it's all energy.
Know?
It's all energy. Jet flying, I forgot the whole quote now, but yeah, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that one was a great one too. Dave Aranda's Brian Danielson, right? Like very technical.
I like that one.
That's a very like, if you're into wrestling, you're like, that works, right? He's all X's and O's, technique, very zen too. Yeah. Like Daniel Brian Danielson,
different
like,
than most wrestlers.
Exactly, yeah, 100%. Like that one is another one of my favorites. But I got to talk about the one that you mentioned, the one that started it all. But let's talk about the personality that started it all, Jimbo and Saban. Mm. Jimbo is JBL. Yeah. That one is perfect. So JBL, basically his whole gimmick was, and I guess it's kind of him as a person too. Like he's kind of just evolved into that.
Yeah.
He's just a stock trader.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of his personality.
Like rich Texas stock trader, oil guy.
Yep. And boy, is that Jimbo Fisher at A&M right now.
I'm smarter than you and I will beat you up.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody lives that more than Jimbo Fisher.
Right. And I don't think it would have really stood out until last week.
Right.
Like it would have been like, okay,
he'd been a cowboy Bob Orton until last week.
Right, exactly. It's like, who's more of a subtle, you know, underspoken kind of guy with a lot of backing and he has a lot of confidence, but not really very braggadocious about it. Last week was like, oh, who pressed my buttons? It's like, you messed with the wrong one today. And so, yeah, last week really kind of made it where it was like, oh, okay, yeah, no, you're JBL, man. You know you're the baddest dude in the room right now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I wanted to go almost with Million Dollar Man there, Ted DiBiase, just for the funny, just for the funny aspect of it. But JBL's whole like, he's country, but he's like smarter than you and better than you, and like you know it and he knows it. It's kind of like MJF before that, you know, like that kind of same. And he was like Mr. Tough Guy, and Jimbo wants to be, you know, all of those things, and you know, and definitely was in the Saban fight. So. Yeah. That one, I was proud of that. Most of them, I think, were pretty good.
There was
Rhett Lashley was tough.
Sure.
You know, like there was a couple that were just kind of, Mike Bloomgren at Rice was tough.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for the most part, I was pretty happy with how it came out.
I think so. If any coaches listening to this and that are on this list and they're confused about which, call us.
Right.
We'll explain it. We'll explain why it works and why it's actually good. Right. We're not here to insult anybody.
We'll have you on the show.
I think I can tell on Lashley. Lashley was confused. He was like, are you making fun of me? Or is this? He's like, I don't know anything about wrestling, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, that's coach.
That's all.
That's exactly what I was trying to do.
Rhett Lashley is Adam Cole. That's a good one. But yeah, like if anybody's confused about it, just ask us and we'll explain it. You know, or just a quick YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, any of these guys talking, any of their personalities, like you'll get it in a minute if you know any of these coaches' personalities.
Yeah. Who before we get into the interview, who is your favorite wrestler like of all time?
Oh man, ooh, that's a good one. I think growing up it was Undertaker. As I got older and kind of digested wrestling differently. Man, who's yours while I think about it? I have a couple names in mind, but I don't want to name
mine's,
like, all of them.
I guess mine's Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
Just of all time. I mean, Roddy Piper when I was a kid, Kurt Angle and The Rock were kind of
kind
of my guys. Especially when Angle was like a bad guy, when he was like heel Angle and stuff like that, and everybody's chanting "You suck, Adam" and stuff like that.
That was
because he's like the best athlete to ever wrestle. You know, like he was tremendous. So that was my favorite. But right now it's Adam Cole, which is what I was telling Lashley. I was like, "Believe I gave you my favorite wrestler." Yeah. So you know,
I think it might be Angle. I think it might be because like my favorite Taker matches with Angle, back in like 2006, I think it was. I always liked the match with him and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. I think it might be looking at his whole career. I think it might be Angle because he was funny too when he got to be funny. He was really funny.
Didn't mind being the butt of a joke. Right. All that kind of stuff.
I think now it might be Adam Page.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it might be Hangman Page. So.
Did you create that graphic too?
No, that was a Will Wilkerson joint.
Okay, because I was like, that's
I don't know how to do any graphic. Like, if there's ever a graphic out there, it is not made by me.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I did not know. It's good. He did, and I think he formatted it greatly.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I don't think
people
in the world understand how important editors are.
Yes.
Yeah.
To like the product that gets put in front of you. You know, it's like I turn in Cole, you know, and then it's like polished into something that's presentable and nice, and then I get all the credit, you know. If you were
right,
like, yeah, that was a great article. It's like you should have seen the first draft, you know, because it was not.
I love it.
All right, Mallory, what do you know about wrestling? Do you have a wrestler that you know?
I'm not into it. I just don't know. I mean, I've followed it a little bit more. Uh-huh. That I've started working here because I've realized that I kind of have to stay cool and to stay hip and keep up.
I will
up.
Say, Craven's added some, like, before Craven got here, it was mostly just me, sometimes Tepper, and then Powers, you know, when he comes in the office, Powers yeah. is a fan too. But, like, adding Craven added, like, another full-time wrestling fan. So, yeah. like, okay. that's why it's gone.
I
mean, that's why it's seemingly
here's
like
a question.
10.
I watch, yeah. like, 6 hours of wrestling a week.
I was about to say.
Like, yeah. Raw, yeah. SmackDown.
Dynamite Rampage.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. like, 6 or 7 hours of wrestling. Now, I record it and fast-forward through a lot of it.
Sure,
and
sure.
stuff, but
right.
yeah, I mean, I love wrestling. I was adopted by my stepdad when I was, like, 5 years old. He got married to my mom. Mm. And he... like old school Leander country guy, right?
right?
And I was none of those right. things as a kid, yeah. right? Even as a kid, I liked the Beastie Boys, you
right,
know,
right.
like I was not. But the things we got, he liked football. He played football at Texas and he loved professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And I could stay up with him
yeah.
and watch like
watch
that.
Monday
could,
Night Raw.
Right.
Yeah.
I could break rules mm-hmm. if I was willing to sit there and watch wrestling with him. And that just kind of became a thing that we like bonded over.
Yeah.
And I think that's when wrestling really solidified in my head. Like, oh, this, I like this.
Similarly,
you know?
Similarly with my dad, it was always like, okay, well, you know, there's the one night right. a day, night a week.
Yeah.
We're up a little bit later right. just because you're right. able to watch wrestling. So
knowing me, who do you think I would like the best?
Mm.
Oh,
since
man.
I can't give you
that's an interesting one.
Since I can't give you an answer,
who would Mallory's favorite wrestler right now be?
Well,
because I'm gonna look them up and I'll report back next week.
I think, based on a lot of things, Dante Martin from AEW.
Yeah,
I think based on a lot of things, you will
okay.
be into Dante Martin.
Is that a good or bad?
Good.
I'm nervous.
Very good.
Craven's laughing pretty hard. I don't know.
He's a good looking guy. Too.
Just learned Mallory's type.
Oh, God.
He's a good looking guy. But he's also yeah. really entertaining to watch. Like, he's
okay.
one of the,
right.
in my opinion, one of the up and coming, like, high flyers in AEW. So I genuinely,
okay.
like, I don't think he's put on a bad match. So yeah. I would say Dante Martin.
That's tough. Like, honestly, okay. I would just say none of them. Like,
just to be safe.
You know how some people are like, this is a thing I love, and so, like, I don't get why anybody else doesn't love it.
Sure.
I've never been that. Like,
no, I've never
totally,
been that either. No,
like,
I would
wrestling,
get if somebody's like, this is dumb.
Yeah, like,
yeah, it is.
There's like a critical point.
Sure.
Right? Like, you can't, like, adopt wrestling later
right.
in life. Like, you have to be born in, because it is silly. Like,
yeah.
it is
right,
it
right.
is kind of weird and silly and kind of, you know, it has its own, and if you don't, like, grow up around it or like it for years, it's like very hokey and like
right.
yeah, you just like, but like when you have like, you just like suspend reality for it if you mm-hmm. have been into it.
I feel like that's how baseball is, you know.
Ooh, that's a good point.
I did not grow up as a baseball family. My dad doesn't watch it, my brother didn't play it. We grew up solely as a football and basketball family, so that's
yeah.
I think that's why I'm so, you know, that's why I love football and baseball or
sure.
basketball the most.
Yep.
Did not grow up watching baseball. And
it
I
is crazy how much
like
just like we're just products of like what the people around us like.
Right.
Right.
You know, we all see ourselves as like these beacons of individuality, right?
It's
like,
no,
it's
like you're
really just,
yeah.
you're really
yeah.
just whatever the sum of the people
yeah.
that you were around the most enjoy.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, with that said, we will get into our interview now. By the way, David Bailiff, what's his comparison? What do you think?
Ooh.
Oh, man. You know, honestly, he'd be another, like, Dusty Rhodes
oh,
type
yeah.
of guy,
yep.
you know? Yeah.
I was
that,
trying to think of, like,
Dana
a good
Dimmel.
Old boy back in the day.
Right.
It's like, Dusty
right.
Rhodes is kind of like the
right.
guy.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Ooh, that's not a bad one.
You know?
That, you know what? You know why that works? Because, like, up until, like, 5 years ago, Hacksaw Jim Duggan was still wrestling.
Right.
So, like,
right.
I think, like,
and in
my,
the interview,
my mom would come in. He's like, is he still wrestling?
Is that the same 2x4?
Right.
It's got termites on it and stuff. Yeah, David Bailiff in the interview coincidentally was like, I'm coaching till I can't remember my name anymore. Like, he said that.
Sounds like
yeah.
Jim Duggan.
So,
did.
Yeah. So definitely a lifer.
Yeah.
You know, like, definitely somebody who would have been around his whole life and, like, would stay on in the background somewhere
mm-hmm.
behind the scenes, even, like, Gorilla Monsoon or something like that, you
yep.
know? Like, something like that. But,
yep.
Jim Ross.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like,
that's a good one. Yeah. I like that, so.
And he gave us a queso recipe.
Ooh. Laid out the entire recipe.
Walked us through a smoked queso recipe. So
gave us the amounts and everything.
Notes. Well, yeah. You're welcome, listeners.
So you are welcome.
We will get into our interview now. Here is Texas A&M Commerce head coach David Bailiff.
Here with Coach David Bailiff, Texas A&M Commerce. Coach, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on. You're an offensive lineman at Texas State. I was curious kind of, you know, what was the sales pitch? What was the recruiting pitch for you to kind of get down to San Marcos?
You know, my sister was there. It was 50 miles from home. And I actually was a tight end for 3 years. And then they moved me to guard my last year after knee surgery. But I also, we were running the split back beer with Jim Wacker. So I finally, years later, figured out I was just an outside tackle. I was either blocking down or I was blocking out. They threw me the ball once a game to keep me from quitting. But I had a blast, had great coaches there, really enjoyed my time and really just close to home. You know, that was something that was important to me.
Yeah, you were a team captain by the time you got out of there. Like, where does that rank in terms of just like your all-time accomplishments or things you're most proud of?
You know, really, to be honest, the thing I'm most proud of is when I graduated, everybody graduated that wanted to. There wasn't all this help. You know, you had to have your own catalog. You had to figure out your own classes. You had to run up and down the stairs at the library to get stickers. You know, things have really changed. You know, there was no study halls. There was just have enough discipline to graduate or you're going to flunk out. So really proud that I'm a college grad. You know, that's, and really my other greatest accomplishment are my children. I mean, my kids were my hobbies my whole life. When you're a coach, you're really busy. So I tried to include them as much as I could in everything I did. Then they outgrew me. So now I don't have any hobbies.
You know, you were there when it was Southwest Texas. My mom is a Southwest Texas grad and still calls it that. I'm curious, like, what's your percentage of times you call it Texas State versus Southwest Texas?
Well, when Denise Trouth hired me to be the head coach there, I was under orders not to call it Southwest Texas. I was, you know, if I said it, I was supposed to write on the chalkboard 100 times, Texas State, Texas State. And, you know, my dad really said he went to work for Humble, and it ended up Exxon. And just to get over it and move on, you know, it was better for the future. And it truly is. You know, the people there, you see Texas State T-shirts everywhere you go. I think, you know, every year another year moves away from it. You know, at one point it was Southwest Texas Normal School.
Right.
You know, I think change is good. I like the change. You know, when I initially took that job and I'd say, I'm David Bailiff, the new head coach at Texas State. It's just located Southwest Austin. You know, they told me to cut it out. And, so I did. But that was a blast there. You know, it was my first time being a head coach, and I was a defense coordinator at TCU prior to that with Gary Patterson. And I just had a lot of fun. You know, I've always been happy where my feet are, and just got into this to win and have fun and take care of young people, and I think I've done a great job of it.
Yeah, I love asking coaches kind of like, what was the one or two things you learned that first year as a head coach that you just had no idea of that responsibility or that challenge that was going to come with it?
Well, you know, really, nobody's ready. I figured this out. Nobody's ready to be a defensive coordinator or offensive coordinator until you're one. And then you've got to learn things that you didn't realize you need to learn. And same as being a head coach. You know, there are so many decisions to make daily that have nothing to do with football. You know, it's a total package job in that first year. I'd equate it to my first year of being a history teacher in high school. You know, you just think you're ready, but you're really not. And you just got to keep learning every day. And I had great coaches to learn from moving up through the system. You know, my first job, I was at New Braunfels High School with Jim Streedy. We were the winningest high school in the state of Texas that year. And then I tell you what I did. This is the biggest lesson I learned early. I was a high school coach for 3 years. I was a unicorn, and our motto was don't play leapfrog with the unicorns. It was a very savage beast. But all my buddies that got business degrees were driving around these fancy Tornados, and I was driving an old pickup truck, living in a beat up mobile home, and I just had to have one of those cars. And so I got out of coaching, doubled my salary, bought me a Tornado, and after about 6 months, thought, what have I done? I hate not being a coach. And then it took me 2 more years to get where I wasn't upside down on that note to get rid of the car. And then I went back and GA'd at Southwest Texas. So I learned early, you better do what you enjoy doing and be happy going to work every day.
I was going to ask you about that New Braunfels stint when you were a history teacher. Kind of what is David Bailiff's kind of like favorite period of history?
You know, really the Texas history, the Alamo, the 1800s, how Texas was formed. I think it's incredible. You know, and I can tell you, our family's been here since the late 1800s. And, you know, it's a state I take great pride in and love being a Texan, love being called a Texan. I was actually at the University of New Mexico when my wife and I were expecting twins, and we left there to get back to Texas so my kids could be born in Texas. Just that important to me.
I was going to ask you that as well. Like, you know, for most of your career, you've been in Texas outside of that New Mexico stint. How weird was that for you to kind of be outside of the borders for those couple of years?
Well, you know what? When you get into this and you're young and you think you're going to see the world, right? I'm ready to go to New York City. I'm ready to go to California. And then other than New Mexico, it's been different counties in Texas. And that wasn't by design, but it actually was a blessing. You know, I got to see my parents for an extended period of time, and my sister and brother enjoyed a lot of the games. And had I really left the state, and I was ready to, but I just never had a job offer out of the borders, you know. And, you know, I'm really proud that I've been a FBS coach in Texas, a FCS coach, and a Division II coach in Texas. And, you know, we've had a 10-win season everywhere we've been at all the different levels. You know, I have fun. I've done this. I'm not going to do anything else. This is what I want to do. And I told my coaches in the last staff meeting, I will never stop doing this until I can't remember my name. And then I need y'all to say, coach, it's time to go. Because I'm as excited about what I do now as I was when I started. I love the profession. I love being around people. I love helping people. I love women. I love recruiting. There's nothing about this job I don't like.
Yeah, you mentioned kind of the different levels of football you've coached at, pretty much every single level of college football in the state. Is there one that's more challenging or presents more problems or headaches maybe than other divisions, or kind of each division kind of the same as the other ones?
Yeah, I think every division is you know, you've got to win. You got to graduate your students, and it doesn't matter where you are. I think the most challenging at a Division II is just, you know, trying to figure out those 36 scholarships and how to stack the aid. Whereas Division I, it was easy. Everybody got a full, you know. And so now you're looking for academic aid. You're looking if their parents were military. You know, you're looking for any scholarship that are available out there to make those 36 scholarships go further.
You were a GA, you know, when you kind of came back to the college level at Texas State. What's the difference between being a GA back then and maybe what GAs are asked to do now, if there is any difference?
Yeah, there's a lot of difference. Because back then when you were a GA, everything was still 16-millimeter film, right? Mm. And so you had to drive to an alley in Austin to get your film processed. And you got 2 copies, and then you had to go to the airport and fly your film to who you were going to play. And then you had to drive back to San Marcos, and all the full-time guys were there abusing you, wanting to know what took so long. I mean, just how it was. And then at the end of the year, when you made your cut-ups, you had little splicing machines. And so, like, if you had 46 veer, you had to find every 46 veer, and you'd cut it out, and you'd hang it on the wall under 46 veer, 47 veer, 44, 42. And then you had to splice all those together to recreate that film. And you had to put your initials on your splice, so if it came apart, the head coach knew who did the bad splice. So it's come a long way now where we can just make cut-ups by hitting a button.
Yeah, that's wild. That's absolutely wild. You know, you mentioned earlier that you were a defensive coordinator for Gary Patterson, who's, you know, known as kind of this defensive guru over those last 20, 30 years. Like, what was that like? How much pressure is it to coach the position or to coach the unit, you know, that the head coach is kind of known for doing well?
Well, you know what? I learned a lot of football from Gary Patterson. You know, he was really gifted defensively. And I had the title of defensive coordinator with him. But normally I only got to make a call when he was chewing somebody's tail. So, you know, it's 4 or 5 times a game I'd look over there and think, oh, I better get a call in. But, you know, you learn so much from him and, you know, just program ideas. You know, you learn from everybody you work for. You know, you learn some good things. You say, if I'm ever a head coach, this is what I'm going to do. And if I'm ever a head coach, I'm not going to do this. And probably one of the best things that's ever happened to me as I moved up the ranks was I had older mentors I could pick up the phone and talk to. So Mack Brown became an amazing counsel for me. Same with Spike Dykes. You know, I could call those guys anytime I wanted and ask them questions and, you know, see what they thought. And, you know, I saw, like, when I was at Rice and we were in Nashville and the hurricane was hitting Houston and I couldn't get home, you know, I knew Mack had been through a hurricane. You know, and, you know, called him, said, tell me what you told your team, you know. And, you know, he said, just let them know we're going to be okay. And, you know, when you go through those hurricanes, that's tough now because you lose cell service and your kids can't, you know, get a hold of their families. And but I learned a lot from those guys. You know, if I could give advice to any young coaches, it would be to make a couple older guys your mentor, you know, and they won't let you make the same mistakes they made.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. I like you, I'm a lifelong Texan, so I don't know too much about those hurricanes.
Well, that when you live in Houston, you better figure out that. I didn't know anything about them either until I moved to Houston and went through a couple. And Harvey, you know, Harvey was a disaster. We were playing in Australia and couldn't get home. And Harvey's hitting Houston, you know, and the hard part on those players is they really don't want to be there when they know their town's being destroyed. You know, they're worried about their families. They want to get home.
Because
Harvey came out of nowhere, you know, and we had coaches whose wives were in shelters and mine was stuck upstairs on the second floor, you know. And so you learn a lot about overcoming adversity when you're coaching in Houston, that, you know, what Mother Nature throws at you.
Right, right. I want to talk about your Rice tenure for a while because to me, you look at it and it just looks unbelievable, right? Rice winning 10 games, winning a conference championship. Like, what are some of the hurdles at Rice that maybe people don't kind of really recognize from the outside that, you know, don't apply to a Texas or an A&M or even a North Texas, UTSA?
Yeah, the hard part there is you have your 85 scholarships, but admissions, if you were never a Rice student out of high school, you're never admissible to Rice.
Right.
So if you go to, there's not very many junior colleges that, you know, the guys had 1100 SATs or top 10%, you know, they don't go to JCs. And so if anybody gets hurt, you're always going to a freshman. So you can never really balance your scholarship numbers. So like we had two big classes followed by two small classes. And you can never say, well, in this class, I'm going to take 6 JCs and balance it out. You just wobble almost the whole time you're there. And there's really no way to fix it. I'm not sure where it is now, but that's how it was when I was there. So the years we won 10, nobody got hurt.
Yeah, okay.
You know, the years we didn't do very good, you know, we had a lot of injuries. And then you can't repair it at semester.
Do you like those kind of challenging jobs? You know what I mean? Kind of a fixer-upper may be the wrong word, but, you know, some jobs that, you know, aren't ready made to go in there and win, or does that kind of appeal to you a little bit more?
You know, it doesn't matter. It was just, you know, I was a defensive coordinator at TCU, and like I said, I've been happy where my feet are, right? And I'm at TCU, and Texas State calls me, and I'm a graduate from there, and you know, and they said, Coach, you're plan A, and we don't have a plan B. Your university needs you. And so I went back, and we won the first conference title there in 26 years. And then Chris Delcani calls me at Rice and says, hey, we want to talk to you. And, you know, then I'm off to Rice. that's just how the jobs presented themselves to me. And I, you know, and I could have had some interviews. It was just a little too cold where they wanted me to go. I just didn't want to do it. That's when I finally, my agent said, where will you go? I said, I'm not going to go anywhere. I got to wear a big coat or chicken fried steaks not on the menu.
Yeah, that's not a bad, that's not, I'm going to add that to my resume. That's not a bad life lesson to learn right there. I don't want to be cold, and I want to be able to eat chicken fried steak.
That's right. It's like when Sonny went to Cal. You know, I was thinking, Sonny, they're just going to make fun of your accent. He's done really well, too. I'm really proud of what Sonny's accomplished.
Yeah, I've always messed with him about, like, going from Ruston to Cal Berkeley has to be one of the bigger cultural changes that you could possibly have.
You know they laughed at his boots. They just had to. Anyway, I'm glad he bounced back strong because he's just like his daddy.
How fun is it to kind of watch some of these young guys? You know, you kind of mentioned being having older mentors, but now watching some of the young guys that you've known, you know, practically their whole lives, like Cliff Kingsbury, Sonny Dykes, Tom Herman, like goes the guys like that. Like, how fun is it to watch their success?
You know what's really crazy about Cliff Kingsbury? I was on staff at New Braunfels with his dad.
Yep.
So Cliff was like 1 or 2 years old. I don't remember. I remember he was still in diapers. And Tim and Sally were having a hard time finding a babysitter. And so as the young coach on the staff, his duties is assigned. And so I went over and watched Clint and Cliff one night, you know, when, like I said, he was 1 or 2 years old. Tom, you know, extremely proud of Tom. You know, he was, they had done well at Sam Houston. And all of a sudden, you know, the head coach sits and that quits and retires. And Tom can't find a job. And what was really crazy about that is, I thought I had hired Major Applewhite at Texas State, and it lasted a day because Syracuse offered him right. A lot more treasure chest than I was. So I lost him, and Craig Nivor kept getting on my desk saying, interview Tom Herman. And so I interviewed Tom and loved him. And, you know, we went to, from Texas State to Rice together. And then he went on to, you know, do great things at Houston and Ohio State. And at one point there, I had Tom Herman that was the head coach at Texas, and David Beatty was my OC at Rice, and he was the head coach at Kansas. You're proud of them. You know, I lost 5 coaches this year here.
Yeah.
But I lost them to the Buffalo Bills, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, La Tech. And you're proud of these young guys moving on. You know, and when it's those kind of jobs, you just look at them and say, let me help you pack, because I'm not naive enough to think they're going to ride with me the rest of my life, you know. And so you try to help them. My job now is to make these coaches' dreams, help their dreams come true. And I try to do that every day on, you know, doing different things and showing them different things. I think they need to be a head coach.
When's the last time you went to a movie theater and watched a movie?
2 years ago, I went and watched The 12 Mighty Orphans.
Okay.
Only because I had read the book. I liked the book a lot better than the movie, but the movie was still entertaining.
What about before that?
I only ask
because, like, I've never met a college football coach who, like, goes to the movie. I feel like y'all are just too busy. It's just one of the things that y'all lose.
I couldn't tell you before that. But I will tell you, I'm going to go see Top Gun.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see that one in a movie theater. But I don't go – I'm just not a movie guy. I guess. I couldn't tell you when other than 12 Mighty Orphans.
When you're not coaching, I mean, you kind of mentioned it earlier, now that your kids are a little bit grown, you don't have as many hobbies. But, you know, what are some of the things that you try to do outside of football, outside of coaching, to kind of relax?
Well, you know what? I am working on the world's best smoked queso recipe right now.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I'm tinkering with that. You know, I don't golf. I don't fish. I don't bowl. Really, my children, my daughter and 2 sons, they were my hobbies. And so now I guess I'm a connoisseur of the smoked meat when I'm not coaching. You know, I'm tampering with my smoker.
What makes for a good smoked queso? Like, where are you at in the process right now?
Well, I can tell you, I get a big turkey roaster.
Ah.
I get 2 logs of Velveeta cheese, 1 original, 1 white. chop them all up, chop up three tomatoes, chop up two sweet Vidalia onions, deseed four jalapenos, five strips of bacon, half pound of chorizo, smoke it on, about, I go about 210 until it where it's just really creamy, may take you about an hour and a half, and dig in. You know, it's pretty good stuff.
I'm glad I have this recorded because now I've just stolen your queso recipe.
And when I'm around at HEB, I'm happy using Whataburger breakfast sausage.
Yeah, it was nice to have. I've moved from Austin to Dallas pretty recently, and the thing I miss the most is HEB.
Yeah, and I think you're going to get one in McKinney pretty quick.
Yep. I'm counting down the days.
In Houston, I had one right at the start of my neighborhood.
It's hard to beat.
And I think what all my coaches that came with me from Rice missed the most.
Yeah, it's I mean, like people ask me, and they like assume I'm going to say family, but the first thing I say is HEB.
Well, what's crazy, when I send my coaches recruiting, I give them my HEB list. That they transport back at the end of recruiting. So I can load my refrigerator with the Whataburger sausage or the prime New York strips or, you know, but I still have scouts that go there and get it for me when they come home.
It's good to be the boss.
Well, you know what? It's just, if I'm not going there, it's just easy, you know, to say. And then my sister lived in Austin. So when she'd come visit, she'd bring, different HEB items. She'd always call and say, "What do you want?" So I still have my HEB connections.
Those are hard to give up. And so one more question before I let you go. As a barbecue guy, like you go to a barbecue restaurant or, you know, a smokehouse or whatever, what's your order? What's David Bailiff's a typical barbecue order?
I want to try their brisket, moist, and I want to try their ribs. And that tells me everything you need to know. If I'm ever going back.
Are you a sides guy? I'm notoriously anti-sides. I just feel like they kind of take up too much stomach space.
Nope, I'm not a sides guy. I'm a caveman meat guy when I go to a barbecue spot.
Good man. All righty, sir. We really appreciate the time. Thanks for toughing it out. I know you're kind of at the end of the COVID quarantine, like you said. Good luck with that. And, yeah, have fun when you're kind of released into the – what are you going to do? Like when that 2 days is up, what's the first thing you're going to do?
Well, we I have a camp today in Dallas that I can't attend. So the first thing I'm going to do, my guys have been on the road for a month recruiting, and so we finally came off the road. So I'm looking forward to getting out of this house and just sitting in a staff meeting, you know, where we can talk about the recruits and what they've found. This came at an inopportune time where I had camps and they were just coming off the road. And I was the most cautious dude trying not to get this stuff. I had an outdoor office on a picnic table when the building was full. You know, I did everything I could. Got my vaccines, did everything. I got it anyway. So I'm just glad to be on the other end of it, and hopefully I don't want to catch it again.
Yeah, I had it once as well during the whole thing, and it was not fun. It was weird. Did you lose taste and stuff like that? I thought that was the weirdest part. I'd never lost taste before.
You know what? I did briefly, then it came right back. So I was really lucky.
Yeah, it's good. It's just a weird
because my former offensive line coach. If I tell you this before we leave, he was giving himself he didn't have a COVID test at home, but he thought he lost his sense of smell, and so he went to his spice cabinet and thought, what in here would I should be able to smell? And it was a red pepper. And he said he snorted and didn't think he snorted hard enough, so he snorted again. He said he didn't smell it, but it burned all his nose and his eyes were watering. So I didn't do anything that crazy. But I tell you what, I love what I do. I love having fun. I appreciate spending time with you, really. You know, when you're in isolation, you look forward to talking to the outside world.
You know, I think we cut out earlier, but one of my favorite stories from doing this Dave Campbell's magazine is when you were the head coach at Rice, I had to talk to you one time, and you had just had knee surgery, and you weren't taking prescription pain pills for it because you'd had some players that struggled with pain pills. I've always remembered that and just thought that was like the toughest thing I've ever heard of.
Well, I'm not sure if that was smart. Do you know, I'll tell you, back when, at my age, when they went into your knee, they would go ahead and take your meniscus out because they said they were like tonsils and you didn't need them. And then you hit about 50 and go, ooh, I kind of needed those things. So I've had them both replaced now. I'm glad I did. It was hard to do, but I just, you know, you see too many people have problems on those things.
100%. Absolutely. 100%. All right, Coach. Well, we really appreciate the time and, get better and, enjoy that staff meeting when you're allowed out of the house.
In 2 days, I'll be in a 3-point stance, ready to get out of the house.
All right, Coach. We appreciate it. Good luck this season.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks again to David Bailiff for coming on and talking with us. Again, one of our all-time favorite personalities. He always usually tries to swing by around coaching school, so hopefully we'll see him again this summer when we're out there in San Antonio. That'll do it for us. You know, like I said, a light week, nothing crazy going on. We just talked wrestling for about 30 minutes, which I have no issues with at all. But again, thanks again to Texas A&M Commerce for setting that interview up with us with Coach Bailiff. We'll see how much longer we'll get this interview series going, because eventually we got to start doing previews, which that's going to be weird looking into the season already, but probably going to be a welcome sight, you know, now that we're done with the offseason, or winding down with the offseason, rather. I'll probably start that around mid-June. We'll give you guys a heads up when that'll be kicking off. But, without further ado, we'll just end it there. Mike Craven, Mallory Hartley, I'm Ishmael Johnson. Please remember to like, subscribe, rate all of us on Spotify, iTunes, all that stuff. Like I said, we do look at the numbers every week, so it looks good if we're hopefully passing TFT sometime soon. So we can eventually, they're within striking distance, like within 100, right? Maybe just over 100, it feels like. They're within.
We can do it.
Yeah. So if we can do that against a podcast that comes out daily,
I'll get Mel Tucker on the show.
That's cool.
If that happens. If we pass TFT, I'm getting Mel Tucker on the show to appeal to the listener, my dad.
If a weekly or twice a week show can pass up the daily flagship show of this company, we will not let them live that down.
Yeah.
And it'll be because of you listeners who spread the word and get the subscriber base out. So with that being said, have a good week. We'll see you guys again.
Go vote.